Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen.
Since I've been president, this is the fourth time we have come together to comfort a grieving community torn apart by mass shootings. Fourth time we've hugged survivors. The fourth time we've consoled the families of victims. And in between, there have been an endless series of deadly shootings across the country, almost daily reports of victims, many of them children, in small towns and in big cities all across America. Victims whose, much of the time, their only fault was being in the wrong place at the wrong time. We can't tolerate this anymore. These tragedies must end. And to end them, we must change. We will be told that the causes of such violence are complex, and that is true. No single law, no set of laws, can eliminate evil from the world or prevent every senseless act of violence in our society. But that can't be an excuse for inaction. Surely we can do better than this. If there's even one step we can take to save another child, or another parent, or another town from the grief that's visited Tucson and Aurora and Oak Creek and Newtown and communities from Columbine to Blacksburg before that, then surely we have an obligation to try.
President Obama speaking last night at an interfaith service in Newtown, Connecticut, following Friday's horrific mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in which 26 people were killed, 20 of them young children, 6 and 7 years old. Americans this weekend fueled their grief and outrage into debate in homes, on social media, reflected in mass media over gun violence in our nation. The debate is not new. For decades, we have struggled to even engage in conversations about how to square efforts to reduce violence and our constitutional right to bear arms, over whether that constitutional right applies to all arms in all situations, whether we can find ways to keep guns out of the hands of those who would do harm without sacrificing the rights of those who wouldn't, over how to keep guns out of the hands of those who are mentally ill, and for that matter, how we treat the mentally ill in America, over whether we are all culpable in perpetuating a violent culture and whether we can even debate these issues honestly. And all of this is a much broader discussion than what we were initially going to have today on Focus. Before Friday, we were anticipating a conversation solely about last week's appellate court ruling affirming a constitutional right to carry concealed weapons for self-defense outside of the home, a ruling which effectively strikes down the last remaining statewide concealed carry ban in the United States. That ban is here in Illinois. Illinois lawmakers now have 180 days to pass some form of concealed carry legislation, though further court action may yet take place. Today on the program, we will talk about the future of concealed carry in Illinois, to be sure, but we will also talk about some of the other issues raised by Friday's mass shooting. Later in the hour, we'll be joined by John Rosenthal, the co-founder of Stop Handgun Violence. In the first half of the program, we are joined by Richard Pearson, director of the Illinois State Rifle Association. Richard Pearson, welcome to Focus.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us, and thank you for your willingness to have this broader conversation in light of the horrific events on Friday.
Oh, glad to be here.
As Richard and I begin our discussion, we also welcome you to the conversation. We welcome any thoughts you have about the shooting in Connecticut, about the court ruling affecting Illinois, about whatever's on your mind about guns, about gun rights, about our gun culture. However you wish to frame it, whatever you want to say about it, we welcome your thoughts this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your comments on our Facebook page. You can find us under Will Radio TV online, and a number of folks have commented there the last few days. We'll hear some of those thoughts later in the hour. We also welcome your thoughts on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Richard, first, I want to give you a chance to share any thoughts you've had, just personally, over the last few days since you heard about Friday's shooting.
Well, you know, we're all saddened by this, when some lunatic gets loose and kills little, you know, innocent children, this is not a thing that's isolated to the United States. Not that it makes it right. I don't know if you've been watching the news, but there were 22 children attacked with knives and in China over the weekend, also or last week. And I was watching Chinese TV, and there was another one where 8 children were beaten to death with hammers. All of these people have mental issues all around the globe, and it's, you know, the tool that they use may be one thing or another, but this is happening in Europe, has happened in Asia, has happened in Canada, places that have strong gun control laws, or just actually impossible ones, but this is happening, and there's something more to it than just the firearm. It has to do with how we handle mental health issues, I believe.
It seems as if we've had a sort of non-debate about guns in the last few years, even as we've witnessed mass shootings. Court rulings have pretty consistently upheld Second Amendment rights to bear arms, last week's concealed carry ruling among them. No constitutional amendment is absolute, and we have placed some restrictions on gun ownership before, but I guess most people would characterize our gun laws compared to other nations as pretty liberal. When all said and done, we generally are on the side of you want a gun, you can get a gun. If you want lots of guns, you can get lots of guns. And many Americans are satisfied with that. Is there a way you see to secure our constitutional rights and yet still seek reasonable restrictions that, if not eliminate, can help reduce the amount and impact of gun violence in America?
Well, actually, gun violence in America has been going down as concealed carry laws have been passed. All of these issues, no matter where they are in the United States, whether they're in Columbine or whether they're in the theater or whether they're in the Sandy Hook or wherever they may be, all have one thing, one other thread in common, or a couple others. One is they've all been perpetrated by people who have mental problems and people who are supposed to be under treatment but aren't. And so we have a real problem with that. If we look at our own state, we have been closing mental health facilities and telling these people that they are better off if they go out into the society. But the one thing that they're not saying is the society is not better off if they go out into the society. The other thing that's happened is we have a number of psychologists and a number of psychiatrists in the state, but they cannot handle the volume that has been let loose on them by the state of Illinois by closing all these mental health facilities. There's not enough psychologists, there's not enough psychiatrists in the state to handle the load.
I heard some argue, in particular on the Sunday morning talk shows this weekend, that it can't be only one thing or another, that we certainly need to address mental illness, fund appropriate programs, seek ways to stop as many people as possible from committing violent acts, but that should be in concert with reasonable restrictions on weapons. Is that something you'd be willing to consider or at least engage in conversation over?
Well, the big key is the word restriction. Of course, we'll always engage in that kind of conversation. We've made mental health records available to the National Instant Check System. But this is a guy, for example, in Sandy Hook that avoided that. His mother bought these firearms, which she knew she shouldn't have been doing. It's illegal for her to give them to this guy, and she did it anyway. So the National Instant Check System worked because he actually tried to buy one someplace along the line and was denied. So his mother decided to do this. And so if you have a lunatic bent on destruction, there's no firearm law in the world that's going to stop him. Okay? And so there has to be a lot of things in concert to stop these types of attacks. You know, for example, I understand the Sandy Hook school had a security guard, but the security guard was unarmed. Doesn't make much difference if you're not armed. If we look at the theater shooting back in, must have been October or whenever Batman came out, or whatever it was. But anyway, you know, there were 6 theaters in the area. All of those theaters, but one, allowed concealed carry permit holders to bring their firearm to the theater. The one that didn't is the one where they attacked.
Well, let me just hone in on one of your points there. You noted that there was a security guard at Sandy Hook Elementary, but that security guard was unarmed. Are you saying that you would advocate for a security guard in an elementary school to carry a loaded weapon?
Certainly. Why not?
You don't see that? I guess the question that I think a lot of people have is, are there locations where you wouldn't want weapons of any kind? Are there some places within our society? And I guess maybe some people would say grade schools might be one of them.
Why would you're not worried about the grade school students. You're worried about kooks like this guy that attacked. Okay? Being unarmed does not make you not vulnerable. Literally, every mass murder in this country that has occurred in what's known as the gun-free zone. No firearms were allowed in the school. No firearms were allowed in the movie theater. No firearms were allowed at the shopping mall where Gabby Gifford was attacked. Okay, you've got to realize that these people are going to find a weapon of some kind, and they are going to attack. And if you decide that you are going to prove yourself to be more noble by not carrying a firearm, you are wasting your time.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing gun violence after Friday's shocking Connecticut school shooting, how the shooting may impact America's conversations about guns and safety. We're also discussing the recent court ruling striking down Illinois' concealed carry ban. We'll get to that and what it means for the future of gun laws in Illinois. And we also welcome your thoughts about what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary, about what it says about our society, and about what, if anything, it tells us about our feelings towards guns. And joining us during the first half of today's program is Richard Pearson. He's director of the Illinois State Rifle Association. We welcome your questions and comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email your question to will-talk at illinois.edu. Phone numbers again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. And we have a few folks on the line who would like to speak with us, Richard, so let's take some calls. We have Ellie on the line from Champaign. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to say that I have experience as a forensic clinician working with the those not guilty by reason of insanity and incompetent to stand trial. So that's where my question starts from. I have two questions. The first has to do, or two areas that I'd like to hear discussion both by this guest and the later guest. The first has to do with the issue that's already been brought up in terms of the conflict between privacy and public safety, because what my experience shows that it's very difficult the privacy shield of mental health treatment to be pierced in order to get information about people in both in terms of firearms and in terms of other weapons that they're trying to get. I was working with the court, so the court gave us special permission, and even then we had difficulty getting information. So that's an issue that I think really needs to be addressed, and it's already been mentioned, but I think it needs to be addressed nationwide because people who otherwise shouldn't be able to get weapons are able to. Now the second point I want to make is a little different. I've worked with people who have murdered. However, a number of the people I've worked with didn't have to use firearms to murder. They used cars, they used knives, and similar weapons. So I think we also need to broaden the issues in terms of the potential danger for those who are both have mental health problems and have potential criminal problems. Now, most of those with mental illness do not commit crimes. I want to say that most, meaning 95%+. So I'll just let you both discuss this. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for having this topic.
Thank you very much for the call. Richard, any reactions to his comments?
Well, yeah, the HIPAA laws have, which is, I assume, what he's referring to, makes it very difficult for anybody to get medical information. Even if you're a family member, sometimes you have a hard time getting medical information, I found out. So, you know, these things have to be adjusted because the system is there to prevent people who shouldn't have them from getting firearms. But if people don't exercise the law, like psychologists and psychiatrists. And if the law actually blocks the right people from getting this information, you know, the privacy aspect, I think, has to take a back seat in this case to the public safety aspect. And I think the law needs to be changed.
The caller also referenced something that you referenced, which is this idea that violent acts can be committed using any number of types of weapons.
Sure.
And so it may not be the specific weapon. But I wonder if we could drill down a little bit further on that point. Would you concede that not all guns are equal in terms of their force and their ability to fire multiple bullets within a short period of time, doing a significant amount of damage? You know, one, you know, an assault weapon, a semi-automatic weapon can fire many more rounds than, say, a handgun.
Well, it depends on the handgun.
Well, it depends on the handgun, but like, a, you know, a standard pistol, you know, right, a six-shooter or something like that.
You know, it's not actually the firearm. It's the person whose hands it's in.
Sure, sure.
Okay? There are 90 million of these types of firearms right. in the United States, at least 90 million. You know, one... In this case, got or two or three, but actually one person used them at Sandy Hook.
Right.
Okay. So the problem is not the firearm. I mean, we you know, I have friends. We shoot these constantly.
Sure.
We don't have any problems. We've never committed a crime, so forth and so on. But the people who get them illegally, or like this guy, who apparently tried to buy one and couldn't.
Right.
Okay. So somebody else supplied with it. Those people need to be punished. Now, in this case, his mother certainly is punished, but that doesn't help those little kids in that school.
And certainly anyone who is hell-bent on committing a violent act will do so with whatever weapons at their disposal. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, are there some weapons that they don't serve any purpose in terms of hunting, or they don't serve any purpose in terms of sportsmanship, or in terms of self-defense? There are some weapons that are so sophisticated that they would seem only to be for the purpose of committing significant acts of violence on a lot of people really fast.
That's untrue.
Okay. Tell me how I'm wrong on that, because
all
I want to understand.
All of these firearms serve a great purpose for self-defense. Okay.
So,
you know, there's, you know, we say, well, we can't have a 15-round magazine. But the criminal can have a 15-round magazine, but you can't defend yourself? Is there some kind of special rule that innocent people can't defend themselves on an equal basis with criminals?
Where do you then draw that line? How sophisticated a weapon?
Well, the
I'm seriously,
it's not the weapon; it's the person who has
right.
it.
But I'm saying
okay.
I'm saying
so it's okay for some criminal to use a more sophisticated weapon. No, somebody who's defending himself.
That's exactly my point. My question
and
is,
I say that's
how do
crazy.
You right? How do you no? What I'm saying is, how do you, if the weapon that criminal has in their hand, if the goal is to be equal in terms of the amount of force, they're going to always get an ever more sophisticated weapon. Do we just always ever match it up to the point where it's like missiles at each other? I mean, I guess there is a point of sort of lunacy in any argument about, you know, how extreme weaponry can be, you know, it's okay.
Well, yeah,
you know, somebody bad out there gets a nuclear weapon, you get a nuclear weapon. But I mean, you know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out where the line is, where it stops becoming a gun and it starts becoming something else. You know what I mean?
I don't think there is a line.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Okay.
Okay. We tried to find a line, but we don't make a line.
Hmm.
And every time this happens, you know, the law abiding citizen who wants to police firearms to defend themselves is supposed to give ground to the bad guy. Why? You know, my family and myself is just important to me as that bad guy is to him. So I want every means possible to defend myself. And, you know, those who have never been attacked see it one way.
Right.
But I have been attacked. I've been attacked by one person. I've been attacked by, in that case, with a robbery. And the other was simply a case of some type of, I have no idea why, but with four guys. And, you know, at that moment, you don't say, gee, I wish I only had six shots instead of 15.
Right.
Okay. Unless you've been there, and I have been there, you have no idea what it's like. And my point is that in any of these attacks, no matter what anybody says, You can't pass a law against them. You can't put a cop in every corner. You can't put a policeman in every house. The only person who can stop that attack is the intended victim. That's the only person that can stop that attack. And if you're not ready for it, you're not prepared for it, then you have trouble.
Okay. Let's take some more calls. We have David on the line from Charleston. Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I don't want to be offensive with your guest, but I think to me, it's precisely that attitude that guns are a tool and that all guns are equal that prevents a real conversation. And then the second point is that I think a lot of what we see from conservative gun advocates is a projection of fear. They think the world is violent because they themselves have a lot of violence in them. And your caller admitted he's been the subject of violence. But I have too. And my inner reflection tells me that the fear I have about what other people might do is in large part a projection of the violence that I have in me. So for me to have a gun to protect myself against all this projection of violence that I see, it just adds to the violence. And the argument that all guns are equal is not a starter of conversation in terms of how to solve this problem. Am I still on the line?
Yes, you are. That's fine. Thank you for the comments.
I'm very sorry to be antagonistic to the caller. I really do want to have the conversation, but I think that trite, you know, kind of cutesy phrase of guns don't kill people, or, you know, people do, it doesn't help us get anywhere. It just doesn't.
All right. Thanks for the comments.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Richard, any thoughts?
Well, I worked for the Illinois Youth Commission early in my career, and I dealt with the violent juveniles. And these people, you know, it doesn't matter whether you have violence in yourself or no violence in yourself. The fact is they look at you as something to gain a goal from, whatever the goal may be, money, you know, something else. You know, but anyway, so the violence in every person is capable of violence because they have a passion for self-defense, okay? So I'm not saying that people don't have violence in them. That's a defense mechanism that all people have, that all creatures have some type of defense mechanism, whether it's to stand and fight or run away, they have some kind of defense mechanism. And so you have to be aware that, you know, human nature makes this part of us. And we can't vote not to defend ourselves. We can't decide, you know, we can't be a bunch of sheep and say, look, if we sacrifice enough of ourselves, pretty soon the wolf won't like mutton. That's not how it works. You know, so we have to be prepared to defend ourselves. And I've taught thousands of people to defend themselves, and I've had several dozen or more call and say, because of what I taught them, they survived. And so, you know, you the person who is attacking you, you have no ability to control them other than by the use of some self-defense mechanism, the best of which is firearms.
I want to make sure that we get to the concealed carry question.
Okay.
In Illinois. How do you think this most recent court ruling last week, essentially striking down the concealed carry ban in Illinois, will frame the debate in the Illinois legislature in the coming months? And do you see ultimately that this may be something that goes to the Supreme Court?
I don't. Well, first of all, I don't think it will go to the Supreme Court, because I think that if it goes to the Supreme Court, that we will win. And there are places who have, like New York City, you know, that may issue, so you can only have a firearm if the mayor likes you, that sort of business. All those things will go out the window. And so I don't think that the anti-gun people want to risk that. The other thing is, of course, it's going to frame the debate, because there's a time limit on some action that they have to take. So the debate is going to be on how much training, how much will it cost, you know, that sort of thing, how many restrictions will be on it, that sort of, you know. And so we're going to see the people in the city of Chicago trying to make it impossible for nearly anyone to get a concealed carry permit, and that's not what civil rights are about. Civil rights are about not making the requirements so tough that a person can't use their civil rights. You know, you can't have a poll tax, which is essentially what some of this actually kind of turns out to be. If you make it expensive enough, then that will go by the wayside. I do think, though, you have to have background checks. You must have training. You must have licensing requirements. You must have the ability to requalify every so many years, and that sort of thing. And in our particular bill that we have out there, we use the same requirements for proficiency as the police departments use for the retired officers' courses. So you have to shoot at a level that equal to that, so that you have a high degree of proficiency.
Richard Pearson is director of the Illinois State Rifle Association. Richard, I want to thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm always glad to be on. Have a great day, everybody.
Yeah, you too. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and in the second half of the program, we will talk with John Rosenthal, co-founder of Stop Handgun Violence. We'll also hear more of your phone calls and emails, so I invite those on the line to stay on the line. First, though, a short break. This is Focus.
I'm Bob Colquhoun, station manager at Illinois Public Media. We just wrapped up our short winter membership campaign. In under 30 hours of fundraising, friends of WILL donated over $30,000 to support Illinois Public Media. This money will help WILL continue our strong programming into 2013. Thank you to everyone who contributed to your local public radio station.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Americans this weekend fueled their grief and outrage into debate in homes, on social media, reflected in mass media over gun violence in our nation. The debate is not new, as we've heard. For decades, we have struggled to even engage in conversations about how to square efforts to reduce violence and our constitutional right to bear arms over a number of other issues, whether that constitutional right applies to all arms in all situations, whether we can find ways to keep guns out of the hands of those who would do harm without sacrificing the rights of those who wouldn't, over how to keep guns out of the hands of those who are mentally ill, and for that matter, how we treat the mentally ill in our nation, and over whether we're all culpable in perpetuating a violent culture, whether we can even debate these sorts of issues honestly. So today we're exploring these issues in the aftermath of Friday's shocking school shooting, but also after last week's court ruling striking down a ban on concealed weapons in Illinois. This is the last state to have an outright ban on concealed weapons. And as we are awaiting our guest for the second half of this program, I want to share some of the comments that we have heard from your fellow listeners, and also maybe take a few calls as we go along here. I'll begin with this comment from Lincoln, who writes, "Murders in 1 year by country," and then lists a number of nations, noting that Finland had 17, Australia 35, England 39, Spain 60, and so forth. And then gets down to the United States, and it's a much larger number, more than 9,000. In this case, I'm sorry, this was from Christopher, who was asking if our first half guest was suggesting that there are just that many more crazy people in the U.S. Christopher says, without concealed carry laws in all those other countries, how does he explain the much lower numbers? That's something we may be able to address with our second half guest, so stay tuned for that. Ben in Champaign says, I strongly disagree with the guest that you just had on. He says, to argue that automatic weapons built for the explicit purpose of killing as many people as quickly as possible are needed to defend yourself is absurd. These weapons are not used in home invasions or small crimes. They are used as weapons of terror to kill innocent people and should be more strictly regulated. We also have a comment from Becky, who says, I'm finding it really hard to listen to your show today. The fact that your guest thinks that no level of armaments should be limited is scary. I don't want to live in a war zone and have to depend that gun owners are not offended or perceived dangers. Guns are part of the problem. She says, although are violent video games and movies. That's something we'll get into. She says, the disregard for human life in our media and our international relations, the incivility in every aspect of life, it seems that everything is just intensifying and adding more and more guns of more and more power just cannot be the answer. Why don't we go ahead and take a few more calls and hear some of your comments as we're awaiting our second half guest. And we will go next to Mike in Tilton. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning.
So what's on your mind about this issue and following, of course, Friday's shooting?
Well, it's a sad thing, of course. You might characterize me as a conservative gun advocate, But I want to just correct something that I've heard on MSNBC about the Colorado shooter. He had a 100-round drum magazine. Yes, that's true. What they don't report, or very few times have been reported, is that magazine jammed. It was useless to him. He picked up his 9mm handguns and killed all those folks with 9mm. Yesterday, Friday, with this elementary school shooter, there was a tremendous amount of ammunition left that he didn't use, even though he had a 30-round magazine. And I just want to leave that out just to think that anyone who would care to do that, they just used more magazines. Mm-hmm. And just that one caller did confuse automatic versus semi-automatic. Automatic would imply imply machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
There have been federal regulations against that for quite a long time. And semi-auto, where you have to pull the trigger each time, is what that shooter used. So,
okay.
Those are my comments, and thank you for hearing me.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call.
Goodbye.
Let's go next to Mike in Bloomington. Hi, Mike.
Hey, hello. I was really hoping to talk to your next guest.
Oh, okay. Well, tell you what, he's just arriving on the line, so if you can hang loose for a minute or so, I'll introduce him, and then we'll bring you back in, okay?
All right, will do.
All right. And I will now welcome in our guest for the next half, and that's John Rosenthal, co-founder of Stop Handgun Violence. Oh, excuse me. I'm told it's not. Hold on just a second. I'm getting more information. Ah, okay. This is Jerry Belair from Stop Handgun Violence. All right. Jerry, welcome to the program. My apologies for the confusion there.
No problem.
Thanks for joining us. And as a reminder to our listeners, you can join our conversation at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. All right. So, Jerry, tell us a little bit about Stop Handgun Violence and what your organization does.
Well, we're an organization that's been in existence since the early 90s. And we attempt to get some sane and sensible legislation around guns passed so that we can have some common sense gun laws that actually stop gun fatalities or reduce the amount of gun fatalities in our state and nationwide.
I imagine maybe the biggest part of how to even begin that conversation and debate is how you define sane and sensible.
Yeah, well, you know, this right now we're talking about assault weapons and we're talking about background checks. And one of the sane and sensible things we've done in Massachusetts, of course, is we anticipated the sunsetting of the assault weapons ban on a federal level, and we passed our own assault weapons ban, which Mitt Romney, by the way, signed into existence. Likewise, you cannot buy a gun in Massachusetts without a background check. And we have comprehensive safety regulations so that guns have to meet certain criteria. They're one of the few things that aren't regulated in the U.S. by the Consumer Protection Agency. So we have actually instituted that here in Massachusetts. Now, John Rosenthal, who's the president, and myself, we've been gun owners our whole lives. So it's not about guns. It's about gun safety and about common sense regulation that will keep guns out of the hands of criminals and kids.
Now, you mentioned assault weapons. Even if we set restrictions on assault weapons, reinstating a ban on them that could pass constitutional muster, we still have thousands of people who die every year by way of a handgun.
Well, that's right. But, you know, if we didn't put safety regulations in cars because we would still continue to have fatalities, we wouldn't have safety measures in cars. What you try to do is reduce the number of fatalities by putting safety measures in cars, and you succeed. The same thing would happen with assault weapons. If you've got a gun that's got a 30-round or a couple of 30-round clips or even a 100-round banana clip, you can do a hell of a lot more damage than you can with a handgun that's got 10 bullets in it.
We're talking with Jerry Belair, legislative chair of Stop Handgun Violence, Massachusetts-based organization, and we've got some folks who are waiting on the line to talk with you, so let's go back to Mike in Bloomington. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. This is a horrible situation out in Connecticut. Of course, nobody's in favor of that. The problem is, the way I see it, and I address this to your guest, is, you know, I'm someone who owns many firearms. To be honest with you, I have
half a dozen AK-47s and don't represent a threat to anybody. And if you were going to say, you know, we don't need 100-round clips, I would agree with you. You know, I might even be able to say we don't need 30-round clips. But the issue I have is, quite frankly, I do not trust you and others of your ilk to ever stop. And that's why we refuse to give any ground, because you're just never going to stop. I'm sorry, but I think that's the impasse we're at.
Okay.
Well, once again, I've been a gun owner my whole life. I have a handgun and I have a Class A permit to carry. So I am going to stop. I'm going to stop with those things that make sense and that don't adversely impact the rights under the Second Amendment. But I don't think the Second Amendment ever construed the right to have the kind of firepower in civilian hands that we have today, and the one certainly that was used in Newtown a couple of days ago, and the ones that were used at a lot of other places, you know, Virginia Tech and you know, Aurora, and over and over and over again. So can we stop these things? Probably not. Can we stop some of them? Probably. And how do we do it? Well, in Massachusetts, we passed some comprehensive gun laws that don't keep guns out of people's hands unless they're prohibited people. And what were the results? We have the lowest firearm fatality rate in the nation. Now, we're a heavily industrialized state, Massachusetts is, and yet we have lower gun fatality rates than Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Hawaii, states that, that you know, you would expect, because they're primarily rural, to have much lower fatality rates. But that's not the case, and it's because we have good laws.
How do you get past that trust issue, though? If there are, I imagine Mike's sentiments reflect the sentiments of a number of people, and you could probably see that on both sides of this debate, that just don't trust the other side, and it makes it that much more difficult to have that conversation.
Yeah, we hear that over and over again, Craig, you know, and that's the issue. You know, it's the camel's nose in the tent argument. Well, you know, if you're going to worry about the camel's nose and you're going to think that it's going to follow, I would take action when the following happens. So if you're concerned about laws that may be passed that aren't the laws that you're concerned about, then I would suggest opposing the laws that you're concerned about not passing rather than concerning yourself with laws that make sense. Now, most gun owners and even a majority of NRA members support banning assault weapons, and they support background checks for all firearm purchases. Most of them do. So if they do, let's just pass those laws and not worry that they're going to lead to something else. If they do lead to something else, oppose those.
Let's go next to Doug in Thomasboro. He's been waiting patiently. Doug, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first off, you know, one just clarification. Background checks are already required, as is a waiting period throughout the United States, period. End of story there. The other thing, too, and this is what the horrific thing, and I checked in again this morning, the timeline out there with this horrible stuff at Sandy Hook, it was over 15 minutes before the police arrived. 15 minutes. As you mentioned earlier, they didn't have a security guard was there, but didn't have it. Here in our local schools where I've taught, like in Rantoul, there's an armed police officer in the building at all times, okay, available there to handle everything. And we're seeing incredible problems with the students and behavior and everything throughout culture. So my question is, and this one I have for the rural areas here, the firearm is not only used for protection, we have to use it for varmints and everything else. That's a given, okay? We need that. If you say that you're going to be safer or safer with this stuff, the police in this case, in a community where they're right there, took 15 minutes to respond. How do you deal with that when you're out here in the rural areas and the police don't respond for half hour or 45 minutes? It's up to the individual to do it, take care of themselves, and you got to comply with the law. And then the other thing, as your previous guest said, I would recommend everybody that's involved in this area. The Champaign County Rifle Club or Gun Save Life have incredible courses for firearm safety that everybody ought to take. And that's just essential. And, I mean, especially the host there for the WILL, you guys should come and take it and learn all about this stuff. And so people, once you communicate, if you have the education and training, you're going to be far better off. But the other thing, too, is and the police officer will tell you, cop ain't nothing but a historian with a gun. They're there after the fact. They're not there to protect us or take care of us, and it's impossible for them to do so.
All right. Thanks for the comments. Jerry, any thoughts?
Yeah, first of all, about 40% of the guns are estimated to be purchased without background checks in the U.S. It's called the gun show loophole, and it was a law that was put forth by the National Rifle Association called the Collector's Exemption. And so when you walk into a gun show in 33 states in this country, you can actually go up to tables and buy guns that aren't federally licensed firearm dealers and buy anything you want without a background check and without even an ID. So the idea that all gun sales require background checks is just simply wrong, and that's the problem. With respect to having, 15-minute response times, generally I think that the response times are much less than that for police. I think they're around 6 minutes on average. But if you're suggesting that we arm our teachers or arm our college students or arm our ushers in movie theaters, I'll remind you that that in Aurora, a guy came in with body armor and smoke grenades. And if people had been armed in that theater and just started shooting, there might have been a real tragedy. With respect to teachers, if a guy comes in with an AK-47 or an Uzi or a Bushmaster like the case in Newtown, and he's wearing body armor and he starts shooting it up, I doubt really that a 27-year-old teacher could reach for a gun and do much to protect the kids or themselves. So I'm not sure that that arming everybody. I certainly don't think that a kid in a college town at a keg party is a good candidate to have a 9mm in his waistband. So I just can't agree with arming people as being the response. We have to rely on our first responders, and I think it's the best we got. What we do have to do is keep guns out of the hands of criminals and the mentally ill as much as possible, and therefore require background checks to all individuals who are buying guns.
One of our the comments earlier from a listener dealt with the question of our culture and whether violent video games and movies play a role. Do you think we, in those terms, celebrate guns too much in America?
Well, we do celebrate guns, and I think that when you watch it on television or you watch it in a video game, you don't see the real carnage. And so I think we become desensitized a little bit when the gun is actually in our hand. But I'm not a psychologist, and I don't know what it is that causes kids like this guy to do what he did. I don't know how anybody can even point a gun at a six-year-old and blow him away. I don't understand that. I don't know what caused it. He had a mental illness, obviously, and he had access to guns, and he had access to a very, very powerful gun. So let's try and do what we can. Make sure a guy like that can't get a Bushmaster. Ban those things. Ban the Uzis. Ban the AK-47s. Ban the clips. People can have a gun with 10 shots. You can hunt with 10 shots. You can protect yourself with 10 shots. An AK-47 isn't a protective gun. It's a strafer. It's something that you use on a battlefield for people to keep their heads down. It's just doesn't belong in civilian use. There's no panacea. We're not going to prevent gun violence in this country, but we can reduce it.
I want to see if we can get in a couple more calls. We'll go next to Kara in Villa Grove. Good morning.
Hi. First thing I want to say is God help us from people who have six AK-47s in their home, because they're not doing it out of defensive behavior. I would like to remind everyone that the framers of the Constitution were talking about single-shot weapons when they said that everyone had the right to be one, and also a society where most people had to kill their own meat. And we seem to forget that we are no longer in 1776. I'm a grandmother. I have a first-grade grandson. What happened was horrible. Of course he was mentally ill. But these weapons that have been developed are too accessible. They're too easily gotten, or we wouldn't have had all of these mass shootings this year. And I just don't understand how anyone can advocate Hunter or not Hunter, that this kind of firepower is necessary. And I'm just beside myself. I'm without words beyond that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Any reaction, Jerry?
Yeah, I agree completely.
All right. Let's go next to Sasha in St. Louis. Sasha, welcome to the show.
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, thoughts and prayers, obviously going out to the survivors and families in Connecticut. But to address both the previous caller and some of the other callers, with regards to the Second Amendment specifically, isn't the word arms the root of the word armament, which itself means the weapons and supply of war of which a military unit is equipped? They were fighting an empire equipped with cannons. And in fact, some of the militia themselves were cannon units. This has nothing to do with the size of a gun. It has nothing to do with the magnitude of the effect of a gun. They wrote that amendment in regards to defending the country against an empire.
Okay. Any reaction to that, Jerry?
Well, you know, the words a militia being necessary to the freedom of a, you know, clearly they intended for the Second Amendment, you know, to apply to the protection in a militia capacity of our country. Now, that wasn't so narrowly read by the recent Supreme Court decision in Heller, which 5-4 held that it in fact is an individual right. Now, Stop Handgun Violence supports the individual right interpretation, but we have to be realistic here. The civilian use of assault weapons was not intended by the framers of our Constitution. I can't see any other interpretation.
There are lots of other questions that I could ask you, but I'm going to turn to one that I received via email from Taylor, who says, I've seen studies on both sides of the aisle. One of the most convincing he references is one called Would Banning Firearms Reduce Murder and Suicide that came from Harvard. And he says that does a good job of convincing me, a gun control advocate, that perhaps it's not that simple. Yes, is there any way we can truly measure this scientifically, or is it really an argument of opinions with little fact? How much of the dueling statistics have more to do with opinion and how much have to do with fact when it comes to really any element of the gun debate?
Yeah, it depends how you use the facts, I guess. But there's a direct correlation between the number of guns in a community and the number of gun fatalities, the number of fatalities and injuries. So in states like Texas and Florida and places where there is a high percentage of the population in possession of guns, there's a much higher percentage of shootings and fatalities. And likewise, when there are fewer guns, there's fewer shootings and fatalities. So I think that's the most important thing. I mean, the reality is that there are people who are legal gun owners until the time that they get upset because some guy cut them off in his car and they just happen to have a gun, you know, in their belt or laying beside them on the seat and take a shot. You know, these things happen or people get angry. You know, most murders in this country are produced by somebody that the victim knows. I mean, and it's just a matter of having a gun available. I think gun in a household is three times more likely to be used in an inappropriate manner rather than for self-protection. So there's some correlation there, and I think that's the thing we need to keep in mind. But most importantly, again, and I keep saying this over and over again, we have to keep guns out of the hands of mentally ill individuals, criminals, and other prohibited people. And if we do that, it would be a great start towards reducing gun violence in this country.
We have just a minute left. How do you think this most recent court ruling last week, essentially striking down the concealed carry ban in Illinois, will frame the debate in the Illinois legislature in the coming months? Do you see this ending up at the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I haven't followed it that closely other than, you know, the judge gave them 6 months, I believe, to structure a new... I'm not sure. You know, we have a concealed carry law in this country, and it's a bifurcated type. But you can be denied by, you know, the police department for a reason not related to the fact that you're a prohibited person under the law. I mean, they can make a choice because the various police departments know people. And so if somebody comes in, and even though they weren't a convicted felon or other inappropriate person mentally ill, the police chief can still deny that license. So, you know, that might be something that makes sense in Illinois. You know, I trust my police department to know somebody that might not be appropriate for carrying a concealed weapon.
We have just a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, do you expect Friday's shooting in Connecticut will be an actual tipping point in our national conversation about guns, or will we simply remain split and find ourselves having a conversation like this after the next mass shooting?
Well, I don't know if you saw Joe Scarborough's representative, Republican, NRA, member, sort of monologue this morning. He's completely flipped. A couple of other people in the Democratic Party, elected officials, who have A ratings from the NRA, says we need to sit down at the table and we need to put this on the table, the assault weapons ban. So I think, yeah, there might be a tipping point. But I will tell you that the NRA is going to fight it, and they're going to fight it hard. So we're going to need, and they spend a lot of money. You know, they grease the skids of a lot of re-election campaigns in Congress. So we've, maybe we'll see a tipping point. I'm seeing a few people turn. I don't know if it's going to be enough, but I hope, I really hope that finally we've seen that there's something we can do.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Jerry Belair is legislative chair from the Massachusetts-based Stop Handgun Violence. Jerry, thanks for talking with us.
Sure. Thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. And everybody that's listening, thank you.
My thanks also again to Richard Pearson from the Illinois State Rifle Association. On tomorrow's show, we'll talk with Kim Nielsen, author of the book A Disability History of the United States. That's Tuesday. Today's show is produced by Travis Stanzel. Kyle Mabry's our technical director. I'm Craig Cohen.